Right. Agenda. Pen. Where's my, oh, there's my iPad. List of phrases to say ding to. Yep, there it is. What am I missing? Oh yeah, Joanna?
Yeah?
Can you get us a beer?
Of course.
We're back. This is A View from the Bridge, official podcast of the Belfast Giants for kingdomofthegiants.com. Today is Wednesday, the 14th of May, 2014, and my name is Patrick Smith. Hello, everybody. It's hope you're having a great summer. We're back for the first of our semi-regular off-season podcast. There is a lot to talk about, so we're going to get straight to it. Of course, you want to get in touch with us, podcast at kingdomofthegiants.com. www.kingdomofthegiants.com/podcast is the website. soundcloud.com/AVFTB. You'll be able to get all the interviews we've done across the season and all the special ones we did at the W5 event only a couple of weeks ago when Steve Thornton was announced as the new Belfast Giants coach. And of course on Twitter at AVFTB. We've got Rob McGregor of the One Puck Short podcast joining us later on. We have an interview with Steve Thornton, about 15 minutes chatting to our new head coach and director of hockey operations. But first of all, let's chat to Davey and the coach. It may be the May time, but there's still plenty to talk about in hockey circles. We're back for the first of the off-season specials. And first of all, joining me is a man who witnessed the Belfast Giants pick up their own league title and wanted one for himself. So please welcome Somerset County Football 2nd Division East champion, Mr. David McGimsey. How are you doing, mate? Congratulations.
Thanks very much. A fantastic intro there, Paddy. As you say, I've been concentrating on the football for the last few weeks now and I'm feeling a bit ring rusty around the old hockey. Hope it goes okay tonight.
And also joining us is a man who this season is hoping to get his hands on another North Cricket Union Premier League trophy, but maybe not share it with Warringtown this year, Coach?
Definitely not, mate. We haven't started the best, so we haven't under my stewardship, so we haven't, but it's a good team, so here's hoping for another few medals come the end of the summer.
Well, guys, there is plenty to talk about. I'll move on to that in a second, but I want to start with something that we haven't done before, and I think it's very worthy of doing. On Thursday night, we heard the sad news that young Belfast Giants fan Oscar Knox lost his battle with cancer at the age of 5. Oscar was a fellow who showed great bravery in the face of what was something absolutely quite devastating to him and to his family. And Davey, it was sad to hear of Oscar passing away.
Paddy, as a dad of two young kids myself, and I'm sure Coach will understand as well, to think that anything would happen to your kids is just a terrible, terrible thing. And you know, the way the wee man fought, what he had to put up with, and it was really an inspirational figure. And, you know, you see how much he's united a lot of people over this last number of years as he's fought the sad illness that he has. He's been a shining light around the Belfast Giants circles. You just see how many players have tucked in behind him and supported him along the way. And he's given so much more back, and it's very sad for his parents and his family. And you know, without wanting to go on about it, all you can do is, you know, pass on the deepest condolences to his family and hope that they find some solace in their grief at the minute.
Coach?
Desperately sad, Paddy, desperately sad. And as Davey alluded to there, you know, became part of the Belfast Giants furniture, and players like Adam Keefe, you know, he might be the big hard guy on the ice, but no greater servant to the Belfast Giants off the ice than Kiefer. And he got to know Oscar very well and, you know, brought him down to the arena and sorted out private boxes for him to come and watch the games. And, you know, his parents were down there by the ice, and Kiefer had him out on the ice and what have you. And, you know, it's so desperately sad. It really is. And, you know, as Davey also said, like as a dad myself, it's the sheer thought of it would just would nearly tip you over the edge. And I think special credence has to go to Oscar's parents as well, who have been incredibly strong throughout it all, and been a great set of parents towards Oscar as well. But such a sad end to quite a remarkable 5 years on this earth.
Absolutely, and our thoughts, our best wishes, and our prayers go to the Knox family at this sad time. Gentlemen, back to what seems inconsequential hockey matters. The Belfast Giants have went through a few changes since we last spoke, most notably in the coaching department. On the 11th of April, it was announced by the Belfast Giants that Paul Eadie was to move on, the website citing facts that Eadie and Todd Kelman had failed to come to an agreement for next season and had mutually decided to part ways. On the 12th of April, Todd Kelman tweeted that there was only one name on his list, and that's who he wanted, and that's who he intended to hire, and it wasn't Doug Christensen. On the 21st of April, the Daily Star ran a story that Steve Thornton was to make a shock return to the coaching job, and on the 28th of April, that shock return was confirmed, as Steve Thornton returned to the coaching job for the Belfast Giants at the season ticket holders event at W5. Gentlemen, let's start by talking about the departure of Paul Eadie. Davey, you know, a league championship won at a canter under Eadie's stewardship. Your thoughts on his departure?
I'm obviously not going to rewrite history here. 12 months ago, I was asked much the same question on Doug leaving and Paul Eadie coming in. And it was sort of, whenever it was first talked about Paul Eadie coming in as coach of the Belfast Giants, it was like over my dead body. You know, there was the whole 26th of October 2002 situation, and he wasn't someone that I was keen on being involved with our club. Saying that, you have to take people on and treat them on the way that you meet them. And Paul Eadie has been nothing short of an absolute gentleman to us as a broadcast over the last 12 months. He's given us unique access into his thinking and interviews on a nightly and a weekly basis. And he's been an absolute gent to work with. When it comes to the hockey, yes, we won a league at a canter. But once that league was won, the wheels kind of came off. And in a fashion, we couldn't bring that drive back that we'd had through the rest of the season. And the Challenge Cup final was a real seminal moment where we just seemed to lose all energy that we had. And you know, we came very, very close in the playoff final, and we lost the Challenge Cup on penalties. But this was a team that should have produced more silverware than what it did last year. Is that down to the coach? Is that down to, you know, whatever? Paul Eadie's moved on now with Steve Thornton in charge. All I would say is, you know, the Paul Eadie was, thank you for the 12 months you give us, and you know, best wishes with your whatever endeavours you go on to in the future.
Coach, you know, it was one of the most entertaining sides that we've had in many years with regards to the Giants, and some really great players there, and players that Paul Eadie brought in himself. So we've talked a lot about the likes of Dustin Whitecotton and one of our players of the year, Calvin Elfring. You know, Eadie did bring in some really good players. Your thoughts on his departure?
Yeah, I'm echoing what Davey said there, to be honest with you, because Eadie is a laid back type of character, and that was great in many ways because it was a veteran leadership team. So he was one of those guys understood when guys needed an extra day off or a bit of rest and recuperation, you know, and things like that. You know, he could be talked to. He wasn't a Doug Christensen type guy bringing guys in, you know, double shifts and bringing guys in later on at night for extra video sessions and all the rest. He knew the score, did Paul Eadie. But Davey's right. Whenever we won the league and won the league at a canter, and then just a couple of wee defeats here and there, you know, my old hashtag of the best foot forward and all the rest. I just felt that we kind of mailed a couple of games in on occasions, and I didn't like that. And, you know, listen, part responsibility is down to the players there as well. But there were certain instances towards the latter part of the season where I felt that Paul Eadie could and probably should have taken the bull by the horns, as it were, and, you know, maybe rattled a few cages. And, you know, you look back and you think, Jeffrey Swayze, was he giving us 100% towards the end of that season? Do you stand up as a coach and say, do you know what, Jeffrey? You're an X-factor player. You're an A-star player. You should be giving us a lot more, and you're not. Do you know what? Sit in your backside for the next 15 minutes. Let's see who's a true pro. There were probably a couple of instances where he could have done that, but you know, without me doing my usual and going off on one, I think it's disappointing in some ways to see his tenure finish the way it did. I think the Challenge Cup final defeat is the one that will rankle with all Belfast Giants fans. The playoff final was a great hockey final. Those things happen in sport. But the Challenge Cup final one was just one that
one little wrangle with all Belfast Giants fans. But Steve Thornton's coming in now. I know we'll go on to talk about him now. I'm very, very excited. But I'll echo what Davey said. I wish Paul Eddy absolutely all the best in the future. And thanks for his 12 months with the club.
I have to agree with both you gentlemen. I think that Paul Eddy, as I say, some of the most entertaining hockey we've seen in years. Some really good players. And we won the league at a canter. But it is, I totally agree, Coach. For me, having stood with Davey at you were at the Challenge Cup final, Davey, were you? You were calling it with Sizz. I've stood there and watched us crumble in the way that we did and have such a dominant lead and been so dominant over the Panthers in our own barn to go in there and just basically fall apart and be done by the atmosphere of the NIC as well as the action on the ice. Maybe just started to make me doubt as to what was going on, but I can't take away from the fact that, you know, a league title was there and some really entertaining hockey. And no doubt that Paul Eddy will be snapped up if a job comes up in the Elite League or if he goes back to, Europe, and best wishes to him. And I'm sure your gentlemen will know that, you know, I was absolutely gutted to hear that Steve Thornton's coming back as the returning coach for the Belfast Giants. Coach, last time he was here for a couple of seasons, he won the Knockout Cup, the Challenge Cup, and finished it off with the playoff title. He has had 4 years out of the game. Coach, what are you expecting from Steve Thornton on his return?
Well, what I like about Thornton is just the way in which he conducts himself. He's quite a small guy in stature, but he has a presence about him, and he's highly respected. I think Thornton's not just a good hockey coach, but he's a player's coach. Guys will follow him naturally. He's a really, really nice guy, but he's also a guy. Now, I actually think the last few years him being in business will actually help in a lot of ways in terms of his man management and how you go about. He's been in the real world, so to speak. He hasn't just been involved in hockey throughout his entire working life. Mm-hmm. And I think that will help massively in terms of his people management. And, you know, he's been brought in, his role within the organization seems to be quite a broad role, not just in the hockey side, on the hockey coaching side of things, but, you know, the role has a couple of different parameters to it, and he wants that. He wants to be heavily involved in that. And I really think that, you know, Thornton, he's moving here, he's bringing the wife and the kids, he's buying a house, he's got the kids sorted out in school and all the rest. You know, he is here for the long term, and I think that stability with bringing Thornton in will definitely help us. And I genuinely think he's an excellent recruiter. You know, we've heard it from Killer. You know, Killer said he's the best recruiter he's ever worked with. The amount of top agents that he knows and guys in the NHL that he knows and the Finnish leagues and all the rest. Those types of contacts are absolutely invaluable to try and bring top-end players into the Elite League and primarily the Belfast Giants. So I'm looking, I think it's going to be a very productive era under Steve Thornton.
Davey, he's come in not only as a head coach, but as a director of hockey operations. So he's been saying, we'll hear from him in an interview in a short while, but he is overseeing quite a wider spectrum, as has been put, of hockey operations with the Belfast Giants. Now, speaking on the on-ice product, we looked at the teams that he brought over here and that we won trophies with. Some of them we might have said, you know, were small hockey teams. He got that sort of mantle of having a small, nippy hockey team rather than having a big guys. Of course, that was put to bed when we brought in Rushton and McMorrow, both under Thornton's previous stewardship. Your expectations? Do you think he can bring a rounded side to the Giants?
You only have to look at our recruitment already and what we have. We'll probably talk about that further as well. You know, there's only a couple of pieces of the jigsaw remaining here, and it'll be interesting to see what way it'll go, because we don't have a massive team. You know, Davey Phillips, Calvin Elfringer, maybe the two guys that are, you know, carrying real serious size and weight, but, you know, Elfring's really not even that type of player. You know, there is room here for us to beef up. Interesting, you know, he'd done very well when he's here the last time in the playoffs and the cup competitions. We came close in the leagues. You know, he's a coach that can't do it all, and he's a coach that, you know, if we get the style of hockey, you sometimes get the style of hockey of what your coach was as a player, and we got that with Paul Eddy, and we got that with Thornton here, and we certainly got it with Doug. You know, Doug was the no-nonsense stay-at-home D-man, very vanilla, very take no risks and steal the game up and win a game 1-0, whereas Thornton and and 80 work. Let's go and win a game 6-5, you know. And I know what the fans are gonna want to watch more.
Coach, is there any concerns about the, like I say, we spoke about the 4 years out of the game, and I asked him a question in the interview coming up. But the fact, not just that, but the fact that the last time he was here, he was a player coach and able to influence on the ice himself. He's now stepping behind the bench where he doesn't have that influence. Any concerns about that sort of change in dynamic?
Yeah, well, first and foremost, a fit Steve Thornton, I would still suggest would grace the Elite League very handily.
Absolutely.
An absolutely fantastic player, as you, and you've been his number one fan. But you know, he was sublime to watch on the ice. But no, I genuinely don't think that'll be an issue at all. I think whenever you step behind the bench, like anything, whether you take on a captaincy role, whether you take on a management role where you're managing people or whatever it may well be in life, whether it be in hockey or whatever aspect, whatever career you take on board, you have to kind of adjust quite quickly as well. And I just don't think that will be an issue for Thornton in the slightest. As I say, he's going to have all summer to think of his systems. He's already got 80% of his team signed up. You know, he'll bring in some top end imports. Make no mistakes about that. He will be looking for the new Jeffrey Swayze at this minute in time. Hopefully the Jeffrey Swayze that was here a few years ago and not necessarily last season. But you know what I'm saying? I genuinely don't think moving behind the bench will be an issue at all. In fact, I actually could see his coaching getting better and better.
Divi, one of the maybe slight criticisms of him here the last time was regards to how he played local players. Now, like Mark Morrison, maybe not getting the, and Graham Walton being played out of position and not getting the sort of game that their natural game is as they would want to play. Do you have any concerns, especially we'll talk later on about the import limit changes, any concerns around that?
It leads to a lovely segue into what we're going to talk about later on with the rule amendments, because it is going to become more difficult, perhaps, for those lower end British players to actually get ice time, because there's going to be that, you know, level of players ahead of them. There's, you know, we're going to have 12 imports for the sake of argument this season. Before you look at the British, the lower tier British players, and it's certainly going to be something that we'll talk about more later on. It's going to be difficult for them, you know. I could hear Coach giggling a bit in the background there when you're saying about, you know, the situation with Mark Morrison and the last time, and even Graham Walton to a certain extent. You know, it was disappointing for someone that had watched those players grow through the organisation and come to a point where, you know, Mo was wearing an alternate captain A when he went under Ed Courtney, and then along comes Steve Thornton and basically career's finished. You know, sad to see him his final game for the club completely spent on the bench. And as you say, he wasn't one that was well known for, you know, really bringing on the younger players, the younger British players. But now with this overarching role that he has within the organisation, that he's in charge of complete control of all hockey operations, where he will have input into the junior giants and how the two clubs maybe segue together a wee bit more. So it'll be interesting. It's a dynamic that's going to, you know, roll over the next sort of 6 months, hopefully 6 years, and we'll just see how that progresses.
Well, let's hear from the man himself. A couple of weeks ago, while he was over, just after the presentation at W5, I got the chance to speak with Steve Thornton, and I started off by asking him, you know, what is it that has brought him back to Belfast?
Well, it was just the opportunity. You know, we've really, since we've left, we've obviously missed Belfast very much, and the opportunity to get back into hockey, to work with Todd, now the board of the Odyssey Trust and Robert Fitzpatrick, it's just, you know, it's basically my dream job.
It's been 4 years since that playoff final in 2010, and the landscape of the league has changed, and you know the landscape of the Belfast Giants itself has changed. What have you been up to in these last 4 years?
Oh, well, I mean, I went over back to Canada, obviously, like after the playoff final. I just wasn't in a position where I can continue to play with the way my wrist was, so I hit the real world. I was involved in different aspects of real estate, had a little thing going on the side. I was doing hockey camps, like pro bono, and I was also coaching kids. So I was still very heavily involved in hockey, but I was basically in the real world.
So just basically a normal real world job with real world problems, no hockey behind it?
No, and you realize pretty quickly. what you've left when you don't have it anymore. You know, it was we knew that it was a really difficult decision to leave. We did it for the right reasons. You know, I just couldn't play anymore. And I know that my personality would have been, you know, that next season, even if I said I was going to be a player coach once the injuries happened, I would have thrown the equipment back on. And you know, we really, really loved living and playing here. And certainly with Jim Gillespie at the time, was an incredible owner. But he was also coming to the end. You know, he made it pretty clear that it was becoming a year-to-year thing, and he was going to wait and see if he was going to start the next season at the end of that season. And it was just, you know, the timing kind of played into it. We had won the playoffs, and an opportunity arose. And, you know, I was at the time ready for retirement from the playing side. And the protocol for the Giants at the time was a player coach, and it, as it turned out, Dougie came in and had the knee injury and turned into a bench coach. So who knows what would have happened if I would have stayed. I just know that, you know, the personality that I have, I would have possibly still be wearing equipment now.
The you're saying about the rule now, the rule how it's changed from that player coach to the bench coach, and now you've come in as what is announced as being a director of hockey operations. To you, what do you see that as entailing overall?
Well, I think it's helping grow and build the business of the Giants. Like, it's not just checking in at 9 a.m. and leaving at 11 after practice. It's, you know, making sure that the junior Giants are running and growing it from the roots and dealing with all, like, the aspects of any questions of hockey, whether it's the travel, whether it's booking work permits, whether it's helping with sponsorship, whether it's having any input in game night operations, whether it's being involved in the school program with Cordy, making some changes if needed, or tweaking things if needed, or just helping kind of guide the ship. So it's kind of what I want to do. Like, I've learned a lot of stuff since I've been away. I've learned to appreciate, you know, what this is. And when you find something you love to do, it's not really work. And I'm looking forward to putting in the long hours.
I think one of the I don't want to say problems, but one of the maybe the shortcomings that Belfast has compared to many of the other clubs around the Elite League is the fact is that junior development program isn't at the advanced stage of other clubs. When you look at clubs like Coventry, have got their, you know, their ENL and maybe are able to source from the EPL as well because it's close by in Milton Keynes. It's something that Belfast hasn't really been able to do. Does that fall into your remit? Do you have a look at the junior setup or maybe involve with the SNL Giants and try to develop more?
I'm not going to be taking it over. Like, it's in good hands right now, and I know that the people that are running it, and certainly Stewie and Mo and those guys, I'm going to help out if there's any input that I can have, whether it's from business development, whether it's from trying to find a way to get more ice time, whether it be at the Odyssey, whether it be at Dundonald, whether it be through a new rink, who knows, you know, like, I'm going to be involved in decisions that you know, might relate to those types of things, and that's kind of what I'm looking forward to. And when the on-ice product with the kids, yeah, well, absolutely. Like, you know, I think it's important that the role models, the Giants, are out there helping, and I think it's important that I'm out there helping. My kids are going to be directly involved in it, so I'm going to be there as much as I can. So it's, you know, it holds a close place in my heart for these young kids. Like, I'd like to get, you know, have aspirations and dreams to be future Giants one day, and you really have to grow at a young age. You have to get on the ice, and if you can't get on the ice, you have to be in the gym, and if you're not in the gym, you have to be, you know, stick handling in the hallway or on the slide board or doing the inline, working on your hand. Like, there's lots of little things that you can do, you know, to grow yourself as a player, and if I can help in any way, shape, or form, that's certainly something I'm going
to
do.
You see that there is a potential there to develop it, to bring more local. We do have had local players in the side. Even the last time you were coaching, you know, there was Mark Morrison, there was Graham Walton, when I have, you know, Robbie Brown, Dicko, and the Gareth Roberts. You know, the potential is there to bring in more.
Well, the potential is there, and it's getting them at the, like, I would like to get some younger players out to practice with us if possible at times, you know, like, I think that's part of something, whether it's, you know, a half hour before we get on the ice or you know, getting Robbie and Garrett, you know, they need to play, you know, and if they're, in our makeup, the way the league is right now, if they're sitting on the bench and they're not getting much ice time, you know, I'm not really helping them that much. So we've got to try to find ways to, you know, to get them on the ice and playing in game situations as well, whether it's with you know, other teams helping out, or whether it's with us. You know, certainly the ice time is there for practices, or whether it's like a Stevie Eccles or some of the younger guys that are, you can get them at a young age. And, you know, you got a guy like Colin Shields, who's a great role model. He's got his, he's got his personal training certificate now that he's working on. Maybe, you know, getting a guy like that under Collins' wing, or finding a way to make sure that he's doing the right things off the ice to be in a position where in 3, 4, 5, 6, whatever it is, years' time, he's a contributor to the team.
Looking at the coaching of the senior squad, I suppose, now, if you want to put it that way, you know, you've come in and you've got 11 players already in front of you. You'll know quite a few of those players. There'll be players that you brought in the last time you were here. What sort of side are you looking to build?
Well, I think that a puck possession side, really. You know, I'm not reinventing the wheel here. There was a fantastic product on the ice last year under Paul. Mm-hmm. I've got a good core of that back, so it's just finding the right pieces of the jigsaw puzzle to give us a chance to compete again. You know, like it would be great if we go through a season where we don't have injuries and you know we can ice a full roster night after night after night. But ultimately, like I like players to be creative. Obviously, the player has to make more good plays than bad plays. Otherwise, you have to take the creativity away from them. I like the D to jump up into play. I like an aggressive, tight D zone coverage. I like players to be on the same page on the forecheck, neutral zone, and in the when they're in their zone. And I like to have set plays off face-off. So where you do the X's and the O's from the set situations, that's I think where the coaching comes into play. And when you let the players' offensive instincts take over when they're in a game situation, because you can't coach that. Yeah. You know, guys have to make decisions out there that, you know, every play is different and you want to enable them. You don't want to make them scared to do those things. But again, like they have to be in a position where they're consistently making more good plays than bad plays, because bad plays will happen. They just have to be limited. You know, maybe a few physical mistakes here and there and less mental mistakes.
So when you look at your recruitment now, Steve, you know, the fact that you've got those 11 players, you've got that core already sitting at you've probably been working hard to bring in these players. And I'm thinking of players you brought last time. You know, you brought Suez here the first time. We had like the Denison and Martin. These are really good, skillful forwards. Are you going to be? Is your approach now, considering you've got that core, proactive to try to build a team, or do you have to sit back and see what sort of other teams are building and try to react to what they have?
Well, there's that aspect comes into it, but it's 100% patience right now. Like usually this time of the year, it's a mad scramble to get the British guys mm-hmm. signed, because you know they go away at GB, and there's only so many of them that that teams are fighting for. So we're in a good position that Belfast has done the right things to make it so these guys want to play here. They want to come back. You know, they do things right on the ice, they do things right off the ice. So that's in place. And again, like compared to when I was here last, I had big turnover because, you know, we the guys moved on. Like they had great years and they were picked up by other teams and other leagues. And right now we're in a position where we have the ability to sign some guys back. So we're in a great, great position. And now it's patience. You know, we've got a solid core in place. I know what the budget is that I'm working with, and I've got an idea in my head as to where the lineup is going to go, what I want out of the last few spots that need to be filled, it is potentially a waiting game. You know, a lot of the guys out there, you know, they start with aspirations of wanting to get into the Swiss league. It drops down to maybe the German, the Swedish, and you know, the jobs start getting eaten up, and then there's maybe a few more players on at a certain point in the summer where you might not have been able to get them at the beginning, but you can get them, you know, in the middle or the end. But if a really good player comes up and they would like to come to Belfast, and it's someone that I think fits into the mold of the team that I want. They're winners. They're good guys in the locker room. You know, they can contribute in different aspects of the ice, then I certainly wouldn't hesitate.
What about your own coaching style now, Steve? Because, like, let's say the last time you were here, you were a player coach. You're now going to have to be in a situation where you, I suppose, last time when you were player coach at Belfast, you were actually able to directly influence the style on the ice because you'd be on there with the guys, you'd be one of the players. Now you're going to be the guy behind the bench. You know, do you feel that there's a frustration of that you have to learn to get rid of, or is it something that you're well used to?
I think I'm in a better position now. You know, being a player coach is difficult because I'm out there harping on players not to make mistakes when I'm making them. Yeah. You know, I also had the ability to maybe spark the team in a way. It wasn't from like I was when I was a younger guy, by maybe being able to take somebody on one-on-one or scoring a big goal. Like, that's not the guy I was at the end of my career, unfortunately. It was maybe going down a block and a shot or something like that, which wasn't the funnest thing in the world. But, you know, if I'm doing it, the other guys are going to do it. So that was, you know, there was a way of doing that. But, you know, the hockey hasn't really changed, you know, like in terms of the goal is to score in their net and then defend your own net. And once you're a coach, you're always a coach. Like when I watch games now, I'm breaking things down. Like I'm looking at breakouts, I'm checking out forechecks, you dream about plays in your head, and it never goes away. So that side of it, it's not going to change. The side of it that I think I'll benefit from now is the man management side of it, and that's 90% of the game. Like you've got to find a way to get the best out of every individual player, and every player is different. The coaches that come in and treat everybody the same, people just aren't the same, you know. Some guys need to pat on the back, some guys need to be left alone, some guys might need a kick in the backside, and I've got to figure out, based on the personality types, what motivates them. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that the 4 years away is going to really benefit me, because that's, you know, that's what you see a lot of the time in the real world. Like you're finding out what makes people tick. Certainly when you're in business, like that man management is something that it happens all the time. And good coaches, you look at the top coaches out there, that's what they are. They're great man managers. They've obviously got their X's and O's down. You put a good system in place. You make guys want to win for each other and they want to win for you. And then you're in a good position.
You've also come into your club now. The ethos has significantly changed from the team that you left 4 years ago. It's built into with regards to the Odyssey Trust and the ethos they're pushing through. You still build a lot of the qualities and the principles from the Jim Gillespie era, but I guess it's like one of the big things that Todd Kellman said at W5 the other night was the fact that you're the last coach he hopes to sign, that you're there with an indefinite sort of level on your contract. Is that a daunting prospect, or how do you see the whole organization? Or how you fit into it?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I know what I'm getting into because I've done it before. I know Belfast. I know being involved in hockey, you're judged on results. So I know that regardless of whether they won the league or not last season, there's pressure. You know, there's certain jobs in the league, there's certain jobs in Europe, and there's certain hockey jobs that expectations are high. And I want it that way. Like I want to throw it out there that like the goal is to win every trophy every year. Like, I mean, you'd be crazy not to have that goal. Every team should be, you know, that's at the beginning of the year. Like, you set those goals and you try to achieve them. Am I naive in thinking for the next 10 years, if I am here for that long, that we're going to win 30 trophies? Well, probably not. You know, injuries come into play, puck luck comes into play, you know, some recruiting, you know, like that, you're going to get some right, and, you know, I think a lot right, and there may be some that don't work, and that's the way it is. But my expectations are high. You know, I want to come and I want to win, and everybody on the team obviously wants to win. Like, it was a great season in the sense that they won the league. Like, it was fantastic for the fans, fantastic for the Odyssey Trust in the first year of ownership, fantastic for Todd. But I also think that they feel that there was also some unfinished business, in the sense that they, you know, they would have liked to have won your last game of the year, you know, and that's what the players like as well. You grow up in Canada, and playoffs is also, you know, very much of a big deal, and being able to go home with the bragging rights in the summer is something that you want to chase. So yeah, I'm ready for that. I know that what I've got myself into, and I would love to make Belfast my home long term. That's the plan. Like, I'm selling homes back in Canada to have the family move over permanently. I was looking at for houses today, and it's a place that I would like to stay, because you know, we've missed it dearly since we've left. Mm-hmm. And having this opportunity with and owners like the board of the Odyssey Trust and Robert and Todd to give me a chance to be involved not only in coaching, but you know, being a director of the hockey and making decisions on those types of things is just wonderful.
And then one of the last few things I'll ask you about is, like I say, just to come back to the recruitment, and one of the big slots that everybody's been talking about is that goalkeeper slot, and the name that always has been creeping up is Stephen Murphy. Fans know that his name's not been down as yet. Is that a key one to get signed up?
Yeah, I think everybody knows what I think of Stephen Murphy.
Yeah,
you know, like, I brought him here. I thought from, you know, when I saw him in Manchester, the way he stonewalled us so many times, that he's the answer. You know, we would love to have him back. We need to make it work, like, for him. We need to make it work for us. You know, when you can also at certain points be a victim of your own success, right? Like, I had a lot of turnover in my years, and I was able to bring guys in that needed to prove themselves. well, a lot of the team that we've got resigned have already proven themselves. So, you know, it just makes it getting those last few spots right in the jigsaw, you know, when there might not be like-for-like replacements financially. Murph is a huge, huge part of the team, and we need, you know, I would love to have him back. And that's my job is starting now in that sense.
Well, you've got a long summer ahead of you, both with reintegrating yourself into this recruitment and the big move. It's going to be a long, long summer.
Yeah, I wish I could snap my fingers and make it happen, but it's exciting, you know. My kids are excited, my family's excited, and you know, we've seen a lot of familiar faces. We're leaving some pretty important people to us in Canada, obviously, and that's going to be really, really hard. You know, for me and the kids, but you know, this is a good spot, and the Giants is like family, and we've got a lot of people here that we're looking forward to spending a lot of time with moving forward.
Well, fantastic. It's good to have you back, Steve, and good luck with the move.
Thank you very much, Paddy.
Steve Thornton there chatting to me a couple of weeks ago. Gentlemen, he's a bit like Paul Eddy last season. He's come into Belfast Giants with quite a few players already in place. We look at the Phillips brothers, Calvin Elfring, Jeff Mason, Evan Chevrolet, Colin Shields, Craig Peacock, Kevin Surratt, Adam Keefe, Mark Garside, and Daryl Lloyd, all really in situ on the Belfast Giants roster. And coach, that's a good situation for him to have, and it's a great situation for the Belfast Giants organization that these players are so willing to come back, even at a time when maybe there was a bit of flux with regards to the coaching situation.
Well, it just shows you know, again, going back to Robert Fitzpatrick and Robert Fitzpatrick's kind of word, building the dynasty, so to speak. And, you know, that's, you know, we've got players, we've brought players in here over the last few years who are looked after very, very nicely, not just by the organisation, but have fallen in love with the city, fallen in love with the Belfast girls, got themselves girlfriends here and all the rest. And well done, some of the girls in Belfast. Happy days. You know, the guys have got themselves hooked up and, you know, absolutely love it here. And, you know, that's fantastic. And that is in no small part, Paddy, down to the way in which the organisation conducts themselves. The club have always, as Todd has said on many occasions, not one time has a player had a cheque running late for their payments and what have you. And I would say you could nearly go around nearly every single elite league club, and I'm not sure if that would be the case, to be brutally honest with you. And the club just look after guys really well. And I think Thornton, you know, the guys that we have already re-signed, I think Thornton would have been trying his backside. You know, if they hadn't have been signed before he took over, he'd have been looking to sign each and every single one of those guys back next season, because they get it here in Belfast. They understand exactly what it means, and they play with passion for the club, and they don't want to move anywhere else. Just look at Adam Keefe now, signed up for a couple of years now. It's absolutely fantastic to see that. Yeah, the guy's been a great servant already to our club, and he's going to be for another 2 years, no question about it.
Davey, the Giants are certainly setting up their stall early. You know, with this many signs going out, we've re-signed our top goal scorer. Our top point scorer in Kevin Surratt. We've re-signed you, Evan Chevrolet. That third line is synonymous around the whole of the Elite League. And as Coach said, a lot of these lads are signed up on two-year deals. You know, your thoughts on these guys coming back so early?
Absolutely fantastic. We spoke about it again. I'm sure it must be a year or so ago about, you know, you can't buy chemistry. You can't recruit chemistry. You can recruit really good players and you can put them on a line together and something might happen. But, you know, we already know what we're going to get from these guys. And apart from that, the guys know what they're getting around the league. This team holds no fear going to Cardiff for the first night because they know what they expect from a tight rink and a crowd on top of you, whereas new players don't. You know, they'll know what, when you go to Hull, when you go to Nottingham, they'll not be overawed by the size of the building, the size of the crowd, because they've been there many, many times. And, you know, 2 points won in September is as crucial as 2 points won in March. And, you know, this team can hit the ground running like they did last year. And we hit the ground running last year and we just were never caught. And, you know, touch wood, that's exactly how it goes this season too.
Well, if you look at, sorry, Paddy, if you look at, listened to an interview, I think it was today, I think it was Seth Bennett was talking to Steve Gertsen about his move to the Coventry Blaze. And Bennett made reference to the fact that the Sheffield Steelers again were going to have like a big overturn of players again. You know, and we talked about this last season, you know, the Sheffield Steelers struggled to get that chemistry early doors because of the sheer volume of new players that they brought in. We're not going to have that, as Davey alludes to. We're not going to have that this season again because these guys have been there and done it. They know the travel schedule. They know what it's like. They know all about having to get up first thing in the morning for continual ferries and flights and what have you. You know, I am absolutely confident that we will hit the ground running again next season.
I think it's absolutely, I have to agree with both of you, gentlemen. I think it's fantastic the way that the Giants have went about this. It's a credit to Todd. It's a credit to Robert and getting these guys' signatures on paper, especially these 2-year deals. It'll make next season's off season a bit dull for us, knowing that these guys are already coming back. There's no real jeopardy about that. I think the signature of Calvin Elfring for me, credit to all the other guys, we know how great they are, but the signature of Calvin Elfring for another season for me was fantastic. Absolutely superb. The guy was the top D-man in the league. A guy, a cut above any D-man we've had for years. You know, it seems to have, you know, they always say, you know, the first yard's in your head. And he seemed to be ahead of absolutely everybody on the ice when he played. Mm. And coach, you were there. The elation that came from the crowd at W5 when he was announced was superb.
I have to say, I remember I was texting the both of you. I couldn't get over it because, you know, Thornton came out afterwards, so he did, and it was just, you know, they brought out Colin Shields and Mark Garza. I can't remember who else was there.
All great players.
Kevin Surratt. All got a very, very good ovation. Do not get me wrong. Mm. But when Elfring came out, my goodness, the roof nearly came off the building. It really did. I think even Calvin was a bit shocked about it. To be honest with you, because the place just went absolutely mad and went on for a prolonged period as well. People were just that delighted to see him back. And you know, I think you know he made it quite public, didn't he? That you know he was here for one season. He was going to get his MBA, retire, and head back to Canada, but his wife and kids absolutely fell in love with the place, and as did Calvin. I think he enjoys a round of golf and a pint of Guinness, and he just fell in love with the place as well. And I think it was from what I read today, his wife nearly talked him into staying on for another season, which is absolutely great to see, because that's a part of it as well. You know, when these guys come in, the kind of older guys in with their wives and their kids, you know, that can sometimes be a burden. So in terms of, you know, if the wife doesn't settle or the kids don't settle, you know, that can put the player under a lot of stress. But again, credit the city and credit to the organisation that these players and their wives and families can come in and settle so quickly and so easily.
Divi, with Elfring being in situ, the one question mark that hangs, and I asked Steve Thornton about that, and he made his thoughts perfectly clear. The one position that is incredibly important is the netminder, and maybe the pressure is on for Stephen Murphy to return.
Oh, I'd love to have Murph back. You know, there's no question in my mind that he's in that very top echelon of goaltending in this league. You know, there's very few goaltenders. You know, Kowalski, Bacala had a very good season last season, but you know, Murphy has now carried us to two league titles in 3 seasons, and you couldn't argue over his importance to the team. You know, he's, week in, week out, I think if anything, he was a better goaltender this season than he has been in previous season, and that's gaining experience when Stephen Murphy's now in his 30s, and he's an awful lot of games under the belt, and you know, people have called into question his durability, but for me, you know, he had a fantastic season last season, and he is a key cog for Steve Thornton to sign back, because he gives us that intangible of that, even though the import level is going up to 11+1, if you like, he gives us that intangible of having that extra on ice out skater that, you know, there's not many teams within the league are able to do. Ben Bounds, Cardiff, hasn't he's gone to, so they, you know, they have that opportunity as well. There's not too many top level British netminders about that can backstop a team to a league championship.
And coach, the one last point is, we don't usually talk about player because there's such a large turnover in the playing staff. Maybe not so much in the Giants compared to the other teams, but one of the players that has left us and has now re-signed in Germany is Dustin Whitecotton, and it was sad to see him go.
Absolutely, he was for me. I said it many times. He was my MVP for this season. I just thought he was phenomenal up and down the ice. Absolutely superb 2-way forward. Worked his backside off for every single shift that he was out on the ice, a true pro. You know, as Shieldsy alluded to, I think, in his interview, or not his interview, in his hosting of the show along with ourselves a couple of months ago. You know, he's kind of the first guy at the rink, last to leave type guy, you know, the ultimate pro. But I think, you know, he made it fairly clear, the German girlfriend, and this was like a 1 year, you know, escape out of the German leagues or out of Germany. And, you know, they were always going to head back to Germany. I think he's going to be setting up a business over there in a vineyard or something as well, from what I heard. So, you know, I think it's as much to do with a personal decision as it is a business decision. Obviously, he's signed there to play in the German third division. You know, good luck to the guy. He'll be, it's a big hole to fill, you know, that centre position that he played. And he was just phenomenal for us all season long, Paddy.
Right, well, moving on. On the 30th of April, not long after Steve Thornton had come in as the new Belfast Giants coach, the Elite League announced a rule change, quite a controversial one with regards to British hockey. The press release said that as of the upcoming season, 2014-15, the number of non-British trained players will rise from 11 to 12, but the amount of work permits will remain at 11. And then over the forthcoming years, the work permits will remain at 11, but the non-British trained players will rise to 13 the season after and 14 the season after that. Now, that's getting varied response from the UK hockey fraternity, varied from a good thing for the Elite League product to an abdication of responsibility to develop British talent. Joining us to chat about it is the host of the One Puck Short podcast, Mr. Rob McGregor. How are you, buddy?
Hi, guys. I'm good. How are you?
Not too bad. You and I had a bit of a discussion prior to this announcement on your own podcast a number of weeks ago about the shortcomings in British hockey, and we sort of went on and on and on, for just basically venting a lot of frustrations. Now, this has come out, and I know you yourself, maybe you're not a fan of this decision.
I'm not. I mean, as I said to you before, Patrick, I know you and I sort of spoke privately about it on the day, and as I said, I get it from the Elite League's point of view. I completely get it. But in the sense of the bigger picture, I strongly disagree with it. I mean, as I said, I get why they've done it. Obviously, these are owners trying to protect their product. They're trying to protect their pocket. You know, the bottom line is important. So I do understand why they've done it. You know, we've talked about it many times. You guys have talked about it. I've talked about it. There is a supply and demand issue for British players at the top level of British hockey. And there's other things that come into it, with the EPL paying, you know, a pretty good wage to a lot of players and allowing the opportunity to have a job away from the rink. Some of the Elite League clubs just can't compete with that kind of offer, which, you know, as I said, I get why they'd want to go down this route, but the wider connotations, they worry me a little bit, because the import level, or sorry, the limit on European players, effectively, because it's a free market to go off to Slovakia or wherever, you know, it's just going to keep rising. And that worries me a little bit.
Davey, we look at this as the perspective of the Elite League in regards to the product. It has been talked about the product, and there have been maybe a number of British players that are not on that team by merit, but on that team because they're British players. Your thoughts on this decision by the Elite League?
I'm kind of, you might find surprisingly, I would back Rob there. You know, the whole raison d'etre at the start of the Elite League setting up after the collapse of Super League was to provide a developmental league that, you know, would tear into a national program to make the British team better. They got rid of the dual nationals, and, you know, they allowed the opportunity for British players to play at the top level of the game. And it would be hard to argue that over the last 10 years, the British game hasn't improved. But as the older generation of British players are starting to tail off in their production, there's not that, you know, new wash of new fresh blood coming in, because there is no development. And I think this is actually going to stunt development more than give players the opportunity. It's a fascinating interview with Paul Thompson. I'm sure you'll tweet up on our Twitter account, Patty. A fascinating interview where he talks about the pyramid system, where there just is no development. In his opinion, the GB national team should be the most important thing in British hockey, followed by the Elite League, followed by the EPL, and so on down the chain. And there's nowhere for young Brits to come in and put themselves in a shop window to be picked up by EPL teams, subsequently the IHL, and then the national team. And it is a bit of a conundrum, because I also agree with Rob there that the bottom line is that people are now paying £16-17 in an era where money is hard to come by. And for your money, you need the best product on the ice to keep people coming back week in, week out. And should people be paying the guts of £20 plus once they've had a beer, you know, to watch British players just being there because they're British? If they're good enough, they'll be there. If they're not, they should be in the next tier down developing to become a good enough player to play in the Elite League. It's a real conundrum. I can see what the league are trying to do. And it's just a real difficult question that's probably going to run and run, because it's going to increase next year. It's going to increase the following year as well with these Europeans. You know, hey, the British players are Europeans. The places are still there in the rosters. If the British players are good enough to get them, go get them. It's maybe a leveling off of salary that people have to live with. I'm just not sure whether it's a good thing for the pinnacle of the British game, which for me should be representing your country.
Coach, you know, I actually fall in favour of this. I think it might be because I'm blinkered with regards to my own love of the Belfast Giants, but you can see in sport, in any sport, you need to have that underpinning developmental section to it. And this decision by the Elite League benefits the Belfast Giants, doesn't it? Because we don't really have the development to the higher level that maybe other teams have in England.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. And, you know, just in the whole issue, I'm fascinated listening there to Rob, listening to Davey. Like you, myself and Davey have thrashed this one out on many occasions since that announcement. You know, I'm like the rest of guys, you know, I can see both sides of the argument here. You know, if you just take me as a hockey fan, you know, if you're a hockey fan, you're walking up to the Odyssey Arena and you're handing over, as Davey said, £15-16. You want to walk in as a patron to see the best product on the ice. You know, I think I end up falling into the category of, if the British players, if they're good enough, they will be picked up. They will get a good contract. Rob Dowd, David Clark, Jonathan Weaver, Ashley Tate, just four names that just roll off the tongue. Robert Lakovich now, Craig Peacock. You know, these guys are all top-end British players, and they will command a good salary irrespective. Some of the other guys, if you look at our guys, you know, maybe to say the likes of Gareth Roberts, Robbie Brown, those guys are sitting there for 58 minutes, 59 minutes a night on the bench. They're doing next to nothing, really, unless we're 5-1 up with 8 minutes to go in the third and final period. Then they'll get a couple of shifts here and there. Is that really developing those guys? I'm not so sure. I listened to Paul Thompson's interview as well, found it absolutely fascinating as well. A man who you can just, the passion just rolls off his tongue to do with GB hockey. And he's quite right about the disparity within UK hockey. You know, it's just such a fractured setup, isn't it? The EPL, you know, the Elite League, you know, it's just all just so fractured. And until all those parties come together as one and sort out a framework for moving forward as a great British hockey or GB hockey, whatever you want to call it, until everyone comes together and formulates a development plan, I just can't see it improving, Paddy.
Rob, coming back to you, the names that Coach wheeled off there, I did note that two of them, Ashley Tate and Jonathan Weaver, are 38 years old. Now, these two lads, they're no spring chickens. They're guys who have been around the block with regards to British hockey and are still considered the elite of British hockey. But surely at this stage, we should be looking to the likes of Rob Dowd, Robert Lakovich. Now, coming back to that pyramid system, coming back to that development, and come back to the responsibility for developing British players, the responsibility surely doesn't lie, or in my opinion, doesn't the responsibility to develop the British players doesn't lie with the Elite League. It lies with regards to the ENL, the NIHL, the EPL, and the responsibility of the Elite League is to refine the best of the best into those players that go into the GB squad. If they're good enough, they'll be in that Elite League. No? Am I incorrect in that?
Well, the thing is that refined in this respect is just another word for development, in my opinion. The NHL doesn't stop developing its prospects once they've drafted them. You know, Matt Duchene didn't just become an elite player overnight when Colorado drafted him. You know, they built on his ice time, they worked with him, yeah. They got him to work on things he was weak at. And the same principle applies for the Elite League. Nobody is absolved from responsibility in this. I'm not just picking on the Elite League. I'm not picking on a particular team. Yeah, everybody has a part to play in this pyramid. And they're absolutely right. It should be a pyramid. I happen to agree that I think Team GB should be at the top of it. I know that's subjective. Different people disagree, but, you know, we're never all going to agree on that. But everybody has a role to play in this. I mean, Craig Peacock has developed a hell of a lot as a player since he came to Belfast. He didn't stop developing. He didn't kind of hit a point where Belfast said, great, we can sign this guy and he'll slot right in. You know, the Giants have worked with Craig. They've told him what they expect of him, what they want him to work on. And he's grown as a player and he's an integral part of the Giants and Team GB now.
Just to pick up on something Coach was saying there earlier on, and you know, Paul Thompson talking about, you know, as passionate as the GB coach, he spoke very passionately about being a parent and how he's got a kid in the system, and he says, don't know whether my kid will make it or not. You know, I don't see the development path through for him to the Elite League. And that has been something that has came through from a lot of parents in Belfast, you know, on Twitter and Facebook over the last few weeks. There was proper outrage from a lot of parents. Kate Morrison was very vocal, and you know, she says she'll come on the podcast and talk through it with us. You know, that there's just nothing there that is giving her kids the opportunity to go straight to the top. But that, you know, that's coming up with what Patty's talking about as well. And when he hit the heart back 10 years ago when the Elite League was formed, there were so many players on 2-way contracts. I think Lee Jamison actually came to us.
Initially on a two-way
contract, and he ended up in Belfast for the whole season. There isn't that development. You know, you look at how the Red Wings are really overripen players. Look at Gustav Nyquist bouncing back and forwards over the last sort of 4 or 5 years between, you know, the Grand Rapids and the big team. To play him for 50 games in the AHL, give him 20 games at the end of the season in the AHL, to blood them, but there isn't that opportunity. There's no joined up thinking between, you know, EPL teams and the IHL teams. You know, that they're completely set up as professional clubs at a lower level, where it's not like the Belfast Giants and the Belfast Giants B team, if you like, playing the EPL. And it was something Tomo had said too about, you know, having that under-20s league or that sort of under-21 league, whatever, where that 18-year-old players develop and then they go to the big club. So should it be junior Belfast Giants play in an EPL or an under-21 league, where every elite team has a junior team assigned to it, and the opportunity to go between the two teams is there, but there's just nothing there for development. Yeah. And I fear that what they're doing here is widening the gap of development, which is going to make it harder for younger players to come through. And when these top tier, you've talked about a couple of players there, 36, 37, 38, whatever, when they pop off to the their retirement village here in a few years, there isn't the volume of high-quality British players coming through because there's nowhere for them to learn their trade.
In typical British hockey way, they'll just become coaches like every other top-level British player. You're absolutely right, but it's, you know, Colin Shields said as much when he was on the show with us towards the end of the season, the fact that there isn't that sort of, was it, he called it a major junior program or something along those lines. And Rob, we've talked about it before, about that fractured, that sort of, and coaches mentioned as well, a fractured sort of path. The ladder isn't there to bring you through to the Elite League. So is it easy to point the finger at the Elite League and say, this is your, you've done this? Or is it a case of that the EIHA and Ice Hockey UK need to get their house in order to lead up to what is the top level British players coming into the Elite League, and then the Elite League are able to reverse this decision?
I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, you've got to have the faith in the players you're coming through. Obviously, Elite League teams aren't just going to sign guys because of their passport. And as Coach referred to earlier, you've got guys like Robbie Brown, who maybe played a couple of minutes a night, if that. I mean, Giants fans were betting against the Giants when Andrew Dixon was in net against Fife. People on Twitter going, best odds at Paddy Power, bet now. And people were actually betting on the Flyers to beat Belfast, which was incredible. Yeah, but this is the thing. You know, you've got guys there who are, you know, token players. I hate to say that, it sounds horrible, but, you know, there aren't enough guys coming through. We've already mentioned there's a supply and demand issue. You mentioned Weaver and Tate. They're obviously on the wrong side of 35. David Clark's 32. Yeah. You know, he's not got a lot of years left in him at the top level. And when he retires, obviously the import level will go up again. I say import level is a catch-all phrase. And they'll sign some guy from Czech Republic, from wherever. I mean, guys like Rod Saric have obviously been re-signed by the Steelers this week because he's a dual national. So he fits into this new sort of pot of dual national stroke European players. But I do agree that there is an issue developing quality players. You maybe get one David Clark, one Craig Peacock, one Robert Dowd per age group, maybe two or three, but over the whole of UK hockey, a couple of good quality guys is a pretty poor effort, I think, given all the junior programs and all the clubs we have across the board. So there's fault, as I said before, there's fault at many doors. This isn't just the Elite League's fault, but it has a part to play in the system. This isn't just the IHA's fault, but again, it has a part to play in the system. And that lack of bridge and that lack of cohesion, I call it a ladder, whatever you want to call it, is really starting to hurt the game. It's hurting the players because they don't reach their potential. And the clubs don't reach the potential as a result because you don't have the best players you could potentially have. And it just hurts everyone in the long run, unfortunately. It's disappointing, to put it mildly.
And then just to go back to what the point that was made there with regards to what Davey said and that sort of two-way contract thing, we look at somebody like Tom Norton, who this week has dropped the EPL for two, and it's only a two-year contract with maybe a longer term of returning to the Panthers, that they seem to be wanting to farm him there to give him that ice time. Earlier on, Steve Thornton, in an interview with us, chatted about the fact that the young British players, you know, as much as he wants to help them develop, he'd rather they got ice time, be that with the Giants or he seemed to hint elsewhere. That sort of system needs to be in place to help the Elite League. But if they work against each other the way that they are, it's just going to go nowhere.
It is. But one of the real difficulties we've got here is when a given player is at a point in his career where he's probably ready to be a serious part of an Elite League team, what's he going to be, 23, 24, 25, something like that? Well, by that time, he's probably got a job. Maybe he's got a girlfriend, a wife, a kid, maybe, you know. This is the thing. If you play Premier League, trainings in the evenings, games are Saturday and Sunday, with the odd exception, I grant you. But it's a pretty friendly schedule in terms of being able to do things away from the rink. Elite League teams don't always have that luxury. You know, Belfast might be in Brayhead on the Friday night and then back to Belfast for a game on the Sunday, training Tuesday morning. You know, I've had lunchtime training sessions in Sheffield before and the Steelers were on before we were. You know, that's on a Friday morning. That's not particularly conducive to holding down a secondary job. So by the time these guys have hit the age where they would be ready for the Elite League, well, actually, the Premier League might offer the better circumstances because the EPL teams will pay them decent money, possibly better than the Elite League teams would, because why would Brayhead want to pay a guy, for argument's sake, £300 a week as a rookie who is unproven at that level when Guildford probably are willing to pay that money because they know that player can perform in the Premier League? And these are all these really difficult steps that must be a way to overcome it. I think there is, but it's not massively easy because obviously teams like Nottingham can't just snap their fingers and demand the ice. If Disney on Ice are in town, the Panthers are losing out. and you know, it does create difficulties, especially for the teams like Belfast, Sheffield and Nottingham, where other things come to these big arenas and Coventry as well now.
Rob, you're clearly passionate about it, and I've seen quite a few of your tweets and what have you on this subject. To kind of putting you on the spot here, but like if you had a blank canvas on this one and you were put in charge of it, what would you do to bring it all together and sort? What would your action plan be as a hockey fan like the three of us here?
I think a lot of it starts at the bottom, or pretty much all of it will start at the bottom. It's about getting the youngest kids the right quality coaching. I'm not trying to rag on people here, but there are a lot of coaches who are volunteers, well-meaning parents, things like that. You know, they're not, again, I mean, with all due respect, not the greatest skaters, puck handlers, and they're trying to teach kids these really, really important core skills at 10, under 10, under 12, under 14 level. If the kids aren't coming out from the junior system with these core skills hammered down, because that's what the Swiss do now. They hammer these core skills into their kids. Passing, shooting, skating. That, you know, the X's and the O's stuff, which they, you see a lot in Canada, to be fair, the Swiss kind of leave that a little bit. They really get those core skills down. I don't think we're doing that in the same way. So a lot of it starts there. You make sure you have the quality of coaching to pass on these skills. A lot of people, you know, crow about ice time. Well, I'd rather an hour's good quality ice time than 2 hours of poor quality ice time. I think you're going to learn more and develop better. I think it all starts at the bottom there. But one big thing for me is having an overriding goal that everybody is kind of pulling towards. And that should be, in my opinion, that should be centered around TNG, whether that is Olympic qualification, getting to the top pool in the world championships, you know, pick your poison sort of thing. They're both long-term goals. Let's not kid ourselves. We're talking a couple of decades minimum probably to get there. But if you've got an end goal, something to pull towards, at least you're heading towards something. You know, even if you aim high and fall slightly short, well, that's better than not aiming at anything at all, right?
Yeah.
So I think they're two really, really big steps. And I know the IHA have a plan, which is at the sort of consultation stage, at the moment, which could radically change everything under their umbrella. And hopefully, in theory, along the line, it will lead to better British players. And I hope that brings the elite league's interest back in and think, well, actually, we've got these kids under our noses, or these young men under our noses. Maybe it's time we started making use of them. So, as I said, a lot of it starts at the bottom, and there needs to be an overriding goal to it. Although, otherwise, again, you're just paddling the boat around in a circle for no reason. You know, what's the point of British ice hockey is the question I often ask. And right now, it's kind of pointless.
Well, the no doubt it's been a fantastic talking point, if nothing else, and the it's got its critics, it's got its fans. And thanks for joining us, Rob. If people want to follow you or listen to the podcast, where can they get you?
On Twitter, I'm at RobMcGregor35. You can find all the stuff about the podcast on the blog site, which is onepuckshort.wordpress.com. There's the links to the iTunes page and all sorts on there, plus any blog posts I put up. So
it's a great show, not least because even I've been on it. I can't let you go without saying, I just want one word from you. Is it going to be Montreal or Boston?
Montreal.
Ooh. Well, this will go out after Game 7, so we'll see if you're right. Thanks, Rob.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
All right, then. It's a regular feature, kind of an off-season one without a regular feature. And it's over to you, Davey, some Twitter questions.
Yeah, first of the off-season from our tiniest of all the followers, Hilly. I'll come to Coach first. Your thoughts on the most recent signings within the league, and who do you feel have made the right decisions with their choices?
It's hard to look past the Coventry Blaze in the sign of Smith and Gertsen. You know, Gertsen's someone that impressed me massively last season for the Sheffield Steelers in a team that kind of didn't start off very well. Gertsen was always, for me, one of the standout players, a really top two-way forward. He's got great leadership qualities, if you believe everything that you read coming out of Sheffield and all the numerous players that have played with him. I know Todd Kelman thinks very highly of him as well. And, you know, I think Mark Lefebvre seems to be making the right moves. And that's a big, big signing for the Coventry Blaze. It's a real, for me, statement of intent coming out of Coventry with the signing of Smith and Gertsen. You just, all you had to do was see the reaction yesterday of the Cardiff Devils fans to the loss of Smith. You know, how much of a warrior he was for them. And he's one of those guys, comes across certainly from when you see him, you know, consummate pro and does his job in the back end very, very well. And Mark Lefebvre seems to have upped the game and made a real statement of intent.
I have to fully agree with the coach. I think that the Coventry Blaze have two absolutely stonking signings there. Smith, superb, massive, massive loss to Cardiff. Who've also lost Ben Davies to the Clan. You know, they're two big players for Cardiff. They seem to be losing out quite a bit. But also, Gertsen going to the Coventry, not only didn't surprise me that he was leaving Sheffield, I think, but I did surprise he wasn't going to join Finnerty at the Clan. You look back at Sheffield, there's a lot of talk about G trying to, you know, build his own team. Of course, his own team last season had Conboy, ditched Ross at five in Port D. It didn't seem to work. So we'll see what sort of team he builds here at Sheffield with a different sort of, a wage pool, if you want to put it like that. But he has lost Jeff Legree to the Sheffield Steel Dogs. Legree's gone and joined Andre Payet's team, and That's absolutely astounding. Legree's going to absolutely rip the EPL apart single-handedly. I think it's a bit of a coaching job he's got there as well. Also gone to the EPL is Danny Myers. Left the Steelers, gone to the Guildford Flames to join Matt Toe, who's going down there as well. And they've brought in, as Rob mentioned earlier on, Rod Sarich is their 12th import to the dual national, and he'll be a fifth D-man. Sarich is a strange one. He hasn't played for an entire season through, well, I don't know why he didn't play for somebody. There must be a reason for it. I believe he was asked to play for Sheffield, but declined. But he's come back as that sort of fifth D-man. It's very difficult to look past the sign, outside of ourselves. You know, I think it's very easy to go look at Coventry, but I think so far we've obviously got the strongest recruitment so far. But outside of ourselves, Coventry have started signing well, but they always seem to do that. It's whether they can put that into a team or not is the big thing.
Who was it we were talking about just the other day, perhaps coming to Brayhead to replace Kevin Bergen?
Stephen Gertsen.
Was it Gertsen? It was Gertsen.
I thought that maybe before he was announced to go to the
Braves. Yes, it was, yeah.
We're speculating, that's right. We're speculating that. That obviously hasn't panned out that way. Obviously, it's the off-season at the minute, and we've got a few lazy questions from people. What's the funniest rumour you've heard so far in the off-season, Paddy?
The funniest rumour? We always have... Am I going to pull out the Owen Nolan? That we hear year in, year out. No doubt Stevie Robinson will be on Twitter time and time again saying it's definitely Owen Nolan this time. Outside of that, there hasn't been really any sort of crazy... To be fair, the funniest one that I heard early in the off-season was Jeff Legree to the Steel Dogs, and unfortunately that turned out to be correct.
I haven't heard any myself, to be honest with you, Davey, so move on.
Coach, I'm just going to go with one last one here because there's not an awful lot of questions there that a couple of them are going to be covered anyway in the last couple of agenda points. But Coach, you're a dad yourself. This one comes from Kiwi Chick Northern Ireland. Do blackout curtains help a baby get to sleep at night?
The bird in the woods.
Coach!
Sorry, it's a family podcast. Paddy can beep that out. Yes, of course I do. Of course I do.
But do you find the
question? They help me sleep.
Do you find it makes them sleep longer in the morning? Then they're a bit grumpy come tea time.
Where the hell is this question going?
Anyway, that's all the Twitter questions this week.
Well, a couple of other things I want to just bring up before we move on to the next agenda point, gentlemen, are just when we were talking there about the recruitment. First of all, Ben Bounds has left Hull, and he's joined the Cardiff Devils. A big move for Bounds. But also, sticking with Hull, Sylvain Gloutier was departed the Stingrays after quite a few years there as head coach. And he's been replaced as coach by Pasha and Lauzon, who are sort of a joint coaching setup, Davey. And Matt Suderman's brought his head back up again, and with a bit of a blog post through a guy in Dundee, and he's been backed up by Tom Squires. There seems to be a bit of muddy waters going on. Not the famous Blues trumpeter, but the waters seem to be muddied in Hull, and you don't seem to know what way you want to look in regards to how that setup is.
Difficult one in Hull because you've got the likes of Suderman coming out and saying what he said, and then Squires coming through on official blogs and, you know, throwing allegations against the owners of the club, and you have different fans groups wanting to come in and try and take the club over just completely illegally. But, you know, it seems they're putting a squad together for the season. They've signed Turcotte, a big, big guy, 6 foot stay-at-home D-man, I think he was in France last year. You know, they're continuing to recruit good talent. They've signed a good goaltender. They've signed a good D-man. They've got obviously a few guys back from last season, and they've done very well last season at times. And you know, you can only speculate about what comes through an unofficial blog. You know, at the end of the day, players are returning there. The main players aren't talking out against the club for whatever reason, you know. So you have to take these blogs with a pinch of salt, I think, at the end of the day. You know, it seemed to be Suderman backing up Tom Squires, who seemed to be, if you believe what's in the papers, he seemed to have been lousily treated by the club at times. But you know, that's up to him to take, you know, that up through the proper channels rather than some some kid's blog.
I think it's the thing that for me is that your phrase there, through the papers. It wasn't through the papers. It's the thing that got me, is the fact that it came through these unofficial blogs, that if they were so poorly treated and the situation behind the scenes was as bad as was being portrayed, then not even the local Hull media, maybe even like I said, the Sheffield Star would have picked it up, or would have run with it as sort of an expose of Bobby McEwen, but none of them have. A lot of people say that's because the media are in Bobby McEwen's pocket. Why would they be in the pocket of a guy who used to be the coach or the assistant coach there? You know what I mean? A guy played for the club for a few years. I don't see that myself. I think it's been poorly handled by Suderman and by Squires. They obviously have their reasons, but when you look at Hull itself and the players that they've been bringing in and the players that have been coming back year in, year out, the likes of Tendler, the guy Doucette, you think Doucette would have been there for the entire season if he was being poorly treated? He'd have been going back to France, or he'd skipped out of there quicker than anybody else. Quicker, you could say, City of Culture. You know, it'd be absolutely...
Wasn't one of the Hull players that Doug tried to poach towards the signing deadline? Was it even Doucette or somebody like that?
I think it was Tendler. He tried to bring Tendler into Sheffield.
Tendler, you know, so if things were so bad in Hull and he was being offered big money at Sheffield, it's not a big travelling distance, sir. He'd have been away.
Coach, one of the players, they have retained the players, but one of the players that you spoke of at the back of the end of last season, and a guy that impressed you a great deal, was Ben Bounds, and he is the player who has departed there.
Yeah, he's moved on and gone to Cardiff. Chambers, I thought that he would have ended up somewhere like Brayhead. So I did, you know, kind of, I'm undecided whether or not that move to Cardiff is going to be a good move for him or not. You know, I listened to Wiss's interview this morning there that he gave the Devil's website. You know, Wiss will always try and put a positive slant on things, as he always has done, always will do. But, you know, they've lost a lot of key players already. It's going to be a massive change there in the big blue tent. And if reports are to be believed, the budget is less than it was last year for the Cardiff Devils. Ben Bounds is going to face a lot of rubber. You know, unless Wiss recruits a top D. But you know, good luck to the young lad. I really thought that he would have ended up going to one of, I just thought to myself, the likes of Brayhead Clan, one of the kind of, I don't know, stronger Gardner Conference arena team is exactly the words that I was looking for, Paddy. Would have taken a punt on him. You know, he took over Murphy, didn't he, at the World Championships? Mm-hmm. You know, he ended up getting the starting slot there, played very well to Ben Bounds, and you know, a lot of credit has to be given to him. I was majorly impressed with him on the two or three occasions I saw him at the Odyssey Arena towards the end of last season. It's going to be interesting to see how he goes in Cardiff.
And they're moving on, gentlemen. No doubt there'll be a lot more signings to speak about at our next show. This next section we're going to talk about, I'm going to start off by saying, Davey, I want you to take a deep breath, right? And if you've got Valium there, you need to take them, because I know what's about to happen. The Nottingham Panthers will be the Elite League's representative in the European Champions League of Hockey. The wild card was offered and then withdrawn to the Giants, I believe, and that the Giants subsequently lost the arena dates. And when the wild card was reinstated by the Champions Hockey League because they wanted a wider representation, unfortunately, the dates that were the set in stone by the Champions Hockey League to take place were gone to the Giants, not available to the Giants. And therefore, the Panthers put their hand in the air and said they could be the representative of the Elite League in that competition. I'm actually just going to go to you, Davey, and take your thoughts on it, because I know you were quite angry.
Angry is the wrong term, Paddy. You know, I'm surprised. We spoke about it the day after the Challenge Cup final, when it was announced that if the Giants won the league, which looked likely at the time, and the CHL went forward, the Giants would be the British representative. And for winning the Challenge Cup, the Caps would then go into the Continental Cup. Now, it turns out the Belfast can't go into the Champions League. So what it would do, we don't go to the second place team in the league. We don't go to the third place team in the league. Did the Panthers even finish fourth, you know, by the skin of their teeth? We'll go just to Nottingham because they've probably got the biggest arena and the most money and they can afford to do it. It's just a joke. They're a team that I hate and I hope they get beat six times.
Coach, it's quite a coup for the Nottingham Panthers, as much as it would be a coup for the Belfast Giants to represent the Elite League in what is going to be a fabulous tournament against Europe's elite. Now, a lot of these games will take place before the actual season begins, and the Nottingham Panthers are going to have to bring in that team early. I don't understand yet the restrictions. There obviously won't be an import restriction, which is great for the Panthers because they've got a million of them. Your thoughts on how the Panthers are going to represent the Elite League? Is this a good thing for the Elite League or just a good thing for the Panthers?
I suppose the answer to that will be whenever we'll know that whenever we see the results. You know, if Nottingham can pull off one or two surprise results, and that, let's be honest, that's what it'll be up against some of these teams with budgets 10 times, 20 times the size of anything you'll see in the Elite League. Then it'll be a good exposure for the Elite League, no question about that. With regards to Nottingham Panthers going there, I suppose I'm kind of throwing a question back here. Do we know if there was a financial amount that had to be paid to enter this Champions League? Something in the back of my mind said £40,000 or something like that had to be put up by the representing team from the league. Is that correct?
I believe there is some form of retainer of quite a high, £30,000 to £40,000, to actually be part of this league, and maybe that's something that the Giants also took into account.
I'm sure the Panthers will be able to pay that with the royalties from their number one hit.
No, I had two obstacles, Paddy, to do with this in my own mind, and that was to do with the finance side of it. You know, if it was going to cost the club £40,000, was it real? Is it really going to be worth it? And the second side of it was, I was worried about us getting embarrassed going up against Ice Baron Berlin, for example, at the O2 Arena in Berlin. 14,000 people in there. You know, okay, we would have our 12 imports or whatever, but like, you look at Ice Baron Berlin and compare their squad in comparison to ours, like, we could be on the wrong end of a pretty decent hiding. And I just kind of thought to myself, is it really, really worth it? And my other worry, sorry, three worries that I had whenever I think about it, was the fact that I thought that the dates of this was going to be during the season, so to speak, and that's now not the case, you know, so it's going to be played. I think five of the six games are going to be played pre-season, before the start of the Elite League. You know, so I suppose from a financial point of view, I was always worried about it. So I was, and I was worried that we were going to get absolutely chinned. But, you know, I look at, going back to the Nottingham Panthers, I think the Panthers will improve their roster massively from last season. I don't think Corey and Rick Strachan will let what happened last season happen again. I think they'll try and recruit a lot better and a lot heavier as well. And you know, I think the Panthers have a shock or two in them, to be honest with you.
A few.
Coach, do you think that the Panthers are worthy of the position?
No, but I think no, they're not. If you look at the league standings and what have you, Davey. No, but you know, I think this season's or the season's just past results would be a bit of an anomaly. You know, we talked about it a million times and what have you. Like, the Panthers did go through a hell of a lot of imports for various different reasons. Guys leaving, guys injured, and all the rest. Corey had a bad year in terms of recruitment. I don't think he's going to let that happen again. But, you know, I think Belfast, we've obviously, we're going to enter it, then lost dates and all the rest. Sheffield, I presume Sheffield were asked, but turned it down. Did I read that?
You'd like to think so. As you were talking, I was thinking about that.
Yeah, they've obviously turned it down. If they turned it down, it would have been
widespread in the media, especially from that estate agent.
Someone like Craig Somerton, who picks up on every press article and what have you, maybe be the man to ask. But I have something in the back of my mind that Sheffield did turn it down, but I could be wrong on that.
You'd like to think, in their position, considering they were runners up and a playoff championship, that, you know, they had more acclaim to that position than the Nottingham Panthers would.
Davey,
with regards to the point the coaches made, you know, and the fact that they could go there and get absolutely pelted, and something that you're actually really hoping for, and if they come up against Ice Baron Berlin, coach, I'll be the first one to get the Leo 2 World in my Ice Baron Berlin scarf, shirt, hat, the works. But if they were, Davey, to come up against these, do you think that could have like a pre-season effect? You know, they could go in there already having been pelted and been eliminated from a competition. How is that going to go for morale as the season begins?
if they take it for what it is, that it's going to be a good experience, it's going to be a team building exercise, and they're going to have six games under their belt, that's a good preseason. You know, most teams in the Elite League here, you know, you've usually Coventry will play Cardiff on a Saturday night and Sunday night home and home series. You know, that's their preseason. We've been fortunate the last few years we've been able to bring a team over or whatever and play a couple of games against them. You have two games the weekend before the season, and then you're bang, you're straight in. And as I said earlier in the podcast, the 2 points on the first night of the season are just as important as the 2 points on the last night of the season. And you've seen how close it was at the bottom of the league this season for playoff spots. Every 2 points is crucial. And the Panthers are going to come in, you know, with six games under their belts, ready to roll. And, you know, from that point of view, if they've got the money to go on this big, you know, pre-season adventure and spend 50 to 100 grand just to, you know, to get a good pre-season under their belt, well, then fair enough, and that's good for their business model that they're able to sustain that. But just for me, you know, if they do get humped 20 by Eastbourne Berlin, hey, I'll be chuffing a cigar that night.
Coach, coming back to the Giants now, with this not being available to them and the Panthers taking that slot, as Davey announced, that the Challenge Cup winners were to take the place in what is to be a revamped Continental Cup. Now, we haven't heard anything from the Belfast Giants as yet as to whether that place is to be taken on. I believe it may be, but I think it's all down to where it's going to be held. I know when we were last in the Continental Cup, we attempted to try to hold the first round that we were in, and it ended up going to Landshut, where we all went over, had a great weekend, but ultimately turned out fruitless. The Giants in the Continental Cup, or the Giants out of the Continental Cup, considering the effect that it's had both to the Nottingham Panthers last season and to the Giants the season before?
I can see both sides of the argument to this one as well. You know, our primary focus is the Elite League. Every single August, whenever players arrive, the goal is to win the Elite League. Obviously, you're trying to win the playoffs and Challenge Cup as well. But I think the Panthers are obviously going into the Champions League this season. I still think we have a duty of responsibility to the league and to the organisation as well, to the city of Belfast, whatever way you want to coin it, to kind of push our brand out there in Europe. And I personally would be for entering the Continental Cup. I think it's something that can bring a team together. You know, it can be disastrous as well in terms of you pick up injuries, you know, playing three games or three nights, whatever it may well be. But I think overall, you know, if you get lucky in that regard with injuries, I think it's the type of thing that can, you know, as Davey alluded to there, galvanize a team and bring a team together away in Europe. Big traveling support from the club as well. Always goes away. The fans love it. You know, it's kind of, unless you pick up injuries, I would say it's a win-win situation. And you just never know, like with the strength of our team last season, for example, you know, if we had been involved, I would have backed us to do pretty well in that. So what if I genuinely mean that? I think we could have pulled off a few shocks. So yeah, but overall, I would be more keen to enter that as opposed to the Champions League.
David?
I think, as Coach has already said as well, our number one duty of care has to be domestic domination. And, you know, you have to take on, at the start of the season, the four trophies you want to win. There's four trophies to win there for the Grand Slam, and you know there's the league, conference, Challenge Cup, playoffs. You want to win them, but at the same time, the players from last season have earned the opportunity to compete in Europe, and the vast majority of those players are back in Belfast shirts this season. And I think if you take the team that we had the season just finished and you put them into Landshut the year before, I think it's a completely different set of results, just from the experience and the different level of team and the different style of coaching that would have had. You know, yes, I would be all for a European adventure, and I don't begrudge Nottingham Panthers being in Europe. I begrudge them being in Europe because I don't believe they've earned the right to be there. Had they been the champions or the runners up in the league or the third place in the league, I think you're getting tenuous here, you know, and fourth place in a 10-team league, you're represented as the champions. I don't begrudge them a place in Europe if they'd earned it.
Well, the draw for the Champions Hockey League will take place on the 21st of May. The Panthers are in pot four of the four pot seeding. It'll be interesting to see who they're pulled up against. Gentlemen, before we go, just it'll be a few weeks before we speak again. It's always an exciting time. Not as exciting as the season, but seeing these names roll in, seeing this team being put together. Davey, your expectations over the next couple of weeks for the Giants, you know, what do you think? Do you think we'll put anything in place, or is it a more of a waiting game?
I'm hoping that there's already a couple of names, you know, perhaps already inked or getting very close to ink the contracts, and maybe even a few from the familiar faces that we've seen. But, you know, that we've got that extra space now for that European player. I wonder who that's going to be, you know, whether it's going to be one of the German brigade back again, a dual national like Sheffield have went with. It's an exciting time. The off-season is always great for rumours and sort of waiting. As you said, it's a bit duller this season because it's just like, oh, well, we've signed all last year's team. But, you know, we'll wait and see it. It's something, you know, you don't get the same buzz anymore of looking on Twitter in the mornings and seeing, you know, Ante's been on Elite Prospects for half an hour and he's telling you who all's transferred to who. You know, we always look forward to that. And, you know, as the days grow longer and brighter and sunnier and you get away from the hockey for a bit, it's always good to be able to dip in and out.
Yep, get back on that, Andrew. We need more of that. Coach, you know, you've got the distraction of your quest for cricket glory, but you must keep an eye on the hockey, and it's an interesting time of year.
Oh, it's a 12 month a year thing for me, as I know deep down it is for both you and Davey as well. You know, we keep regular tabs on them. I think just go back to your question. You mentioned it, or you asked Davey there, Paddy. You know, for me, over the next couple of weeks, a couple of critical signings. I'd love to see Stephen Murphy signed up, and I'd love to see Cody Brookwell signed up as well. You know, we've got Elfring back. That partnership that he had with Cody Brookwell was absolutely superb last season. So those are two critical signings for me that I'd love to see over the next week to 10 days.
Well, Coach, can I just come back or Paddy and say, I didn't want to name names, but if I had been naming names, they'd have been the two I'd have said.
Of course, everybody believes you, Davey.
Big Cody for me was just absolutely, as Coach has already said, he dovetailed perfectly with Calvin Elfring. The two of them complemented each other superbly. I would love to see the two of them skating out on the first weekend in September together.
And so say all of us. Gentlemen, it's a delight to talk to you again in these bright evenings, as opposed to the dark ones of the winter. But I'll speak to you again in June.
Cheers, Paddy.
Ta-ra.
And that's it. It's been a fantastic week of sport in Northern Ireland with the Giro d'Italia last weekend, the Northwest 200 just coming upon us right now. You know, we've got the World Cup to watch around the corner in global sport. We've just had the football season over us, but hockey is still at the forefront of our minds, and it's great to chat to the lads about it. Thanks to them for joining us. Thanks to Rob McGregor for a fantastic chat about the change in the Elite League in Port Limits, and to Steve Thornton, the new head coach, Ray, of the Belfast Giants, for joining us and chatting to us about that. Also thanks to you for your Twitter questions at AVFTV, as always, to keep in touch with the show, podcast at kingdomofthegiants.com. www.kingdomofthegiants.com/podcast is our web address, and soundcloud.com/AVFTB for all of our interviews. That Steve Thornton one will be up, and there's a whole load of really good ones, including an interview with the mayor, an interview with Rob Fitzpatrick, and all sorts of other people that we chatted to at that W5 event. So that's it. We'll be back in June, and wherever you are this summer, we hope you enjoy it, and we'll catch you here next time. One of you from the bridge.